Coming up on All About Android, I'm joined by Florence Ion, Ron Richards, and our guest Matteo Doni. We talk a little bit about changes that are happening in the Pixel department, or changes that have happened, what it might mean for Pixel phones going forward. OnePlus 8 Pro has an X-ray camera? Not really, but kind of. Matteo, of course, brings his hardware shack to the show, and we have an in-depth look at our experience using YouTube Music over the course of the last week. A whole lot more coming at you next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can assure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. During this time of change, ZipRecruiter's focus has not changed. They're still doing what they've always done, helping people find work and helping businesses find the right people for their open roles. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/work together. And by LegalZoom, take an important step for your family today. Go to LegalZoom.com and get started on a last will, living trust, and more. Or find out how you can speak to an attorney for advice on the right estate plan. And by LastPass, prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass. Trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. Welcome to All About Android, episode 473, recorded Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I am Ron Richards.
And I am Florence Ion.
And we're here bringing you All About Android.
Wow. That's something.
Wow.
Did it kind of sound like the internet was all messed up? Or did it just sound like I'm as slow as my brain feels today? Welcoming back to the show, Matteo Doni. How are you doing over on the other part of the other side of the world?
Mm-hmm. Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me back on the show. I haven't had a haircut since the last time I was on All About Android, and I agreed to have my partner Candace do my hair for me.
I love it. I love it. Matteo's showing me. All I've got going for me are these giant earrings.
And since Flo was having all the fun with the Princess Leia phones a couple of weeks ago, I thought I would try and up the game here.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw it on Twitter. I saw your hair kind of growing out and getting a little longer and everything on Twitter. I was hoping we'd see some sort of hair show today, and it turns out that we have. So thank you for delivering. We appreciate that, Matteo.
I was just going to say, I like to think of myself like an aspirational Craig Federighi of the Android world.
Oh, boy.
I've never seen Craig rock a hairdo like that, but you know.
Yeah, it's true. I like to see him try.
Yeah.
Hair Force One versus Tech Travel Geeks One.
All right, should we do this? We might as well take advantage of the fact that our internet is actually somewhat stable right now. We've got some news to talk about, so let's dive right in. Burke, hit the button.
My scriptwriter dissed me for baby shower, so here's Android news.
Hey,
I like the B plot of this doing All About Android from home is the stress that poor Burke is under in trying to.
It really is. I mean, he's.
But you're doing great, Burke. You're doing great.
Yeah, yeah. We appreciate you, Burke. All right, Flo, you got the top one.
You know who's not doing great? Google's hardware division. There have been a lot of shakeups, and if you have been following along with the news as of last week, then you might have heard about some. You might have heard about some tea that's been spilled over at Mountain View HQ. So, as we learned from this very revelatory article published in The Information, which is a subscription-only publication, we are actually going to kind of give you the quick little TLDR points since, you know, not everybody can go immediately and read it. So first, one of the big reveals was that Mark Lavoie, the person who is basically in charge of that wonderful pixel algorithm that made photos look so nice, he left back in March. So actually, since we've been in quarantine probably, maybe right before he left, who knows? So that along with the departure of Pixel's Mario Quiroz last August, which was kind of quietly, you know, snuck under the rug. This wasn't really something that we knew about. I mean, we just found out about this last week, really. Sundar Pichai was actually on the latest Vergecast to talk about this particular report. He said that hardware is hard, and that Google is planning to continue playing the long game by integrating the hardware division with Nest, absorbing HTC's mobile division, and a couple of other little bits there, just kind of unify those teams versus having them be in kind of their own spaces. He also talked about 2 to 3 years for deeper investments to bear fruit. I'm assuming that was, you know, relating to the Pixel lineup, but we are coming upon the fourth build for this one. You know, this also could possibly tie into the rumors that Google is creating its own chipset. And there's a lot of folks out there wondering if that news is something that's going to kind of herald us into this new age of Pixel devices. What do you guys think? Or do you think this was all just kind of a,
drama
kind of thing.
tempest in a teapot.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question is, are we worried about what the direction of Pixel phones when you've got the person who's behind arguably the critical key feature of the phones from day one, along with another person who's critical to the division as a whole, stepping out? Does that signal any warning, any warning signals around that? I'm not sure how much effect this change would have on it, how much of their DNA is already placed on the Pixel brand. But I mean, it's also really important to note that the Pixel devices as a whole haven't really lit the world on fire. They certainly haven't done what Google intended for them to do. I think they probably intended for these devices to go toe-to-toe with devices like the iPhone and Samsung's devices, and they're just not. I mean,
our fires.
But hang on, I'll object to that, though. Based on what, though? I don't get the sense that Google ever expected this to go toe-to-toe with the iPhone in any capacity. I think that's almost a foolish endeavor. I think what I always took away from the Pixel and the Pixel's placement was to create the kind of best in Google class, you know, device to show off everything to do with Android, to really set the bar for Samsung and HTC and OnePlus and all the other OEMs that are using the operating system. I think to try to put out a device that would go toe to toe with the iPhone you can after all this time period, right? So you have to lead by example. So in that regard, I think the Pixel has been a success. I think I personally never expected Pixel sales. You know, like I think it would be it would be naive to think that all of a sudden the whole world, everyone's going to be using a Pixel when you have so many millions of people who are in the Samsung ecosystem and so many millions of people in Motorola or whatever it might be. So I don't know. I don't know what their goals are with the program. Who knows? I think if you create a piece of hardware correctly, it doesn't have the DNA of just one person. You know, it could be said that the iPhone was Steve Jobs' last big pet project and his DNA was all over it. But here we are, you know, 15 years later, and that piece of hardware keeps rolling on.
It's true.
You know, so it's the future of the device will be defined by if they can outlive people who come and go, and it becomes its own kind of entity that other people, you know, it becomes the sum total parts of everything everybody puts into it.
Pixel devices, they were the consumer-friendly version of the Nexus. That's kind of all that.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only way they exist right now to us.
How is the Nexus not consumer-friendly, though? Like, that's the – I mean, like, it's funny because it's like –
You're right. Well, I mean, flashier, prettier, maybe a little more, you know. But to be fair, that was phone design at the time, too.
Yeah. Well, I can think of big way that the Nexus devices weren't as consumer friendly as the Pixel devices. They weren't available in carrier stores, which at least in the U.S. is true. Required.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God,
I think there was also with the Nexus line of things, there was a completely different product development approach. With the Nexus line of devices, you had the manufacturers like Samsung, like HTC, like Huawei, and LG all going and pitching the hardware as a almost done piece of product, and Google was shoehorning the next version of the operating system onto that hardware. With the Pixel lineup, Google took ownership of this and started designing the product end to end without the full hardware stack being built by a third party. So it's a very different product consideration in the way things were done. But the whole intent of Nexus and Pixel was to have a what goods looks like for everyone to follow on and for everyone to collaborate on. And as far as I know, there was a lot of collaboration that was sparked by the Pixel program, especially between companies wanting to work, whether it was on camera optimizations or battery optimizations or just making Android better. It was, in a way, an incentive for external OEMs and ODMs to participate in the Open Handset Alliance. But obviously, we don't know what the recent departure's effect will be, and we probably won't for at least another 18 months, realistically, because hardware is hard, and the pipelines for those products are not six-monthly. They are at least 18 months long.
Especially now, too, with hardware. Yeah. I'm sure everything is slowed down, shut down, delays.
Well, next year could look very different. They're back to life. I mean, it's at least China-based stuff is back, somewhat back. You know, I say this because I'm in the midst of working on a hardware project where I believe we say hardware is hard several times a day at this point. Yeah. But the most of the factory, at least from what I've heard, at least on the hardware side, is that China's kind of up and running again and product is flowing. But yeah, definitely taking a hit. And Mateo, you're right. I mean, like the it's not going to be like the next device will see the impact of this. It will be, you know, the device after that, maybe even the device after that.
Especially with the way that it takes for like a team to integrate and work together. I mean, just talking about the people who are designing this thing and the people who are, you know, melding heads. We could maybe see a lot of change. I feel like we've kind of been on this autopilot for a bit with the Pixel. Like, even though it's only been four iterations, we kind of figured out what to expect with each new Pixel. And I wonder if maybe this will ultimately be good, because if we weren't wowed by the Pixel 4, there's got to be something down the line.
Well, and the Pixel 5, heavily rumored, with more and more confirmations coming every day that it's going to be not using the top-of-the-line processor. It's going to be using the Snapdragon 765G, I believe, so not the 800 series. And, you know, big question mark there as far as why they're doing that, what that will do. Will people who expect like a premium phone be happy enough with that? Will that lower the price enough that maybe it makes it more consumer friendly, more consumer, like more appealing to consumers? Cause now they're creating a product that's maybe a little less expensive. I don't know, big question mark, but that's what we're going to find out at near the end of this year. We still have to get through the 4A whenever that comes out sometime in the next couple of weeks. So
yeah,
long road ahead of us. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But in the meantime, luckily, we can reset the counter on OnePlus. It's been a while. It's been a while since OnePlus has had a marketing gaffe or some sort of slap the forehead moment. But for those tracking and following this along, this has been a very amusing story. I saw this a couple of days ago and I just laughed. So the OnePlus 8 Pro has a color filter camera on it, right? But it was perplexing. Because a lot of people thought it was an X-ray camera, which It is not. It is an IR camera, and it can see through certain kinds of plastics and in some cases see through fabric. But it just led a lot of people to thinking that OnePlus had quietly launched an X-ray camera, which is just baffling. So OnePlus is going to be pushing out an update to the OnePlus is going to be pushing out an update to the Oxygen OS in coming weeks to disable this camera. And it's already disabled the camera in Hydrogen OS, the operating system that's in the Chinese market. But for a moment, I was like, hey, man, I got to get one of those X-ray cameras.
You know, I went through my house with the OnePlus 8 Pro and the photochrome filter, which is what I have running right now. So, you know, OnePlus, you haven't disabled it yet. And I pointed this thing at every little black piece of technology in my home, and I could hardly get anything to show. The only thing that I could even get any sort of like, oh, I can see the inside just barely was my it's an Insignia Google Home clock that we have here. Mm. And it was just barely. It was like I could see these tiny little dots that I couldn't see to the naked eye. So yeah, it works, but it's very like very specific as far as what kind of devices. Apparently it works really well on an Apple TV.
Interesting. Apple TV. I wonder.
What a bizarre. But, why put an infrared camera filter, but infrared camera software in there at all? I'm just trying to think what use case that solves.
That boggled my mind when I reviewed the OnePlus 8 Pro to begin with. It's like they literally, you know, all this camera hardware that you see on the phone, one of these things, which is, you know, when you add it up, like each of those components adds cost to the device. One of those is an infrared camera that's meant to be a photo filter. It just doesn't make sense. Like I don't understand their rationale. If it takes really interesting looking photos, this one like filter, like we've done filters for years. We've done filters that didn't require extra hardware. Why is that there? And why are we paying for it? It's there because I don't know. What do you think, Mateo?
So I have heard about this before, and this was something that was demoed to us, I believe, at MWC last year in 2019. And it was for smartphones that are used for business purposes. So the ones that you, for example, your Amazon delivery person will be scanning your parcels with. And in some contexts, to calibrate infrared blasters, such as the ones you get on smartphones like Xiaomi or Huawei that have the infrared blaster at the top, to calibrate them, you use the camera on the smartphone to copy the signal that's being sent by another remote device with an infrared blaster. So this is something that is a very niche product. It may just be that OnePlus or their parent company sourced a vast number of these sensors and repurposed them for use in the devices. And the basic firmware for that component and the drivers were still the same as originally. And no one really tested it properly. But this isn't completely unheard of. It is a very niche area of the mobile industry where those infrared cameras actually have a practical use.
Interesting. That's a very specific use case.
It's a very specific use case, but this is my take on why we're seeing this in the OnePlus devices. They didn't really bother going in depth into this. They said, oh, look, we can get this filter effect, throw it into the camera settings without actually testing it properly.
Mm. Well, and that's what I think is really confusing to me. I feel like anyone who's creating a smartphone, especially the big names that are creating smartphones, there has to be a lot of thought about every single component that goes in there because it either drives up the cost or it adds like perceived value for the consumer. This particular feature, like OnePlus did almost no like promotion or teasing about like why it was there. It was just like, and it's got a color filter camera. Okay. But still people were scratching their heads. Well, why does it have that? We already do color filters. There was no real messaging or it feels like any real thought as far. And if there was thought, it certainly hasn't been communicated why that hardware even exists. And now OnePlus has to go in and deactivate the hardware. So you're still paying for the cost of the hardware that you can't use. It's just weird. It's a strange move. I feel like
that's a journey. That's a journey you just took us on of insanity. You know, like that. That's just crazy. But it's one. Yeah, it's one plus. I don't know why I should be surprised.
Right. Then again, at the scale OnePlus is at the moment, that they probably got a really good deal on those components.
I was just going to say.
True.
Take the free stickers, guys. Just take the free stickers. It's fine. You always want them. It's nice.
We're paying you to put this color filter on your phone. That's how good a deal it was. We're giving you money back. Let's see here. Oh boy, this got some chatter over the weekend. Google had suspended the podcast app Podcast Addict. You've undoubtedly heard about this app. It's been around forever. It's a podcatcher that you can find in the Play Store. What's that?
Doesn't Ant Pruitt use it?
Oh, I can't remember. In fact,
anyway, I shouldn't bring him up without.
Yeah. I think maybe he mentioned that on the show. You're right.
Yeah.
I'll check with him. Hopefully, we didn't get that wrong, Ant. But so basically, Google had suspended the app for policy violations related to some new COVID-19 policies that Google as a whole has been put in. They're trying to kind of fend off, you know, misinformation around COVID-19, that sort of stuff. And apparently the policies that they had created extended into Podcast Addict app because – well, yeah, you guessed it. There's podcasts about COVID-19 all over the place. In fact, also in Google's own podcast app. But it was just – this was one of those situations where – and we've heard this story a million times at this point – where a developer hears from Google. Google says, we've suspended your app. You violated this thing. And the developers are scratching their head. They're like, okay, well, what is the thing within that thing that we violated? And Google doesn't have a whole lot of answer there. They've just said, no, here's the thing. We've listed, you know, it's like they give you the heading, but they don't give you the details. And so then as a developer, you have to dive in there and you have to kind of like parse it yourself and hope you get it right. And if you resubmit too many times, you might be flagged in that, for that reason alone as well. And if you don't do it fast enough, then the app can go away forever. And that's what the developers of the Podcast Addict app were afraid of. Like, if we don't do something in the next 14 days or however long it is, this app goes away. All of our, you know, years worth of ratings and reviews and installs and everything, we have to start over, all because Google called us out for this thing that all podcast app have COVID-19 podcasts in there, including Google's own. Just felt like a very hypocritical thing, but also really details the kind of the challenge that developers face when they come up against this with Google, because as we know, Google's really hard to talk to about certain things, and this would be one of them. Mateo, you might be the closest of all of us to, realizing a reality in your own world and development where you might come up against this. What's your take on this?
It's really, really difficult because on the one side, I really feel bad for the podcast addict team because for them, it must have been really devastating to be pulled off the Play Store and not have a good reason for it. That must have been really tough. But on the other side, I understand what Google's doing. They're trying to curate, not so much curate, but police a marketplace that previously was criticized for allowing very harmful apps to be out there. And it's personally, I would prefer to see Google make mistakes in good faith, as they obviously did in this case, because it makes for a safer Google Play store. And on the other side, you didn't see this happen with the Amazon App Store. Podcast Addict, I believe, is still available there and in the other app stores globally. So, yes, Google Play is the biggest one out there. There were mistakes made. I'm sure things will get fixed at some point. There will be an account manager at Google who will reach out to the dev team and to their marketing team, and I'm sure they'll be able to make things right. But it's a tough situation to be in.
Yeah, I mean, Hiroshi Lockheimer has already tweeted out, hey, apologize about this. We're working out the kinks here. carry on with your podcasts, folks. This app should not have been removed. So Google's already kind of, you know, in contact with Podcast Addict to kind of figure this out. You know, somewhat related, Push Bullet, which is an app that's been on the show many times. They have a Chrome extension that suddenly they got the 14-day, you know, fix this or it's going to be removed from the Chrome Web Store. Again, Google was very vague about the reason exactly why. And like, I totally get it. Like, Google wants to police its stores, and they have to do what they have to do. But I also am somewhat aware, tangentially aware, but not directly, that Apple may have some sort of, I don't know if it's like a fee that you pay to get direct access to Apple in the case of certain things like this, to basically give developers the ability to look deeper into the why and what around these things. And Google doesn't seem to have that. And I think developers might actually want that.
Don't think that Apple gives developers too much more to work with. I've worked in several companies with several different apps with Apple where you submit an app and it gets rejected for one reason. They'll tell you what it is. They will communicate what the problem is or whatever it might be. And then you'll fix that and you'll submit the app again and it gets rejected completely for a different reason. So the Apple app review process is very much whoever the person that's reviewing it at that time, and a different person looks at it every time you get it. And neither Apple or Google have figured out this process clearly. Because with Apple, you're paying to participate in the developer program, which is supposed to give you insight, stuff like that. And a lot of times you're left pulling your hair out as well, because you're Apple will come back saying, we don't like the wording of that, mm-hmm. Which is just baffling and just, you know, very frustrating.
I completely agree. I've been there as well. App reviews in app stores are always the most worrying part of an app release or an app version release. And it's not just Google and Apple. Samsung with their app store, which is very popular in Asia, even Huawei's App Gallery and Amazon's App Store, they all have these review processes which are not clearly transparent because they don't want some developers to be gaming the system. But what I will say is if you have a very popular app and you have very successful metrics which differ from App Store to App Store and maybe from market to market, you will have an account manager from Google or Apple who you can pick up the phone and call. So if you have a big successful app, you'll be looked after.
But the number of people who have that realistically is so minimal. You know what I mean? I would honestly, Pushbullet has been around for years and has established that. I would be surprised that they had that level of support. Clearly they don't. Right. So, that favored nation crap is just that's what pisses me off about it so much is that of course they'll bend over backward, Apple will bend over backwards to support Pandora or whatever it is. But if I'm an upstart startup that's doing a really cool music app, you get no support, yes, it's a meritocracy and I get it, but that's just even more disappointing in how the whole thing works.
It's not developer friendly.
Yeah, no, it's not developer friendly at all. Yeah, so but so much in this so much in this world is not independent. Whatever. Don't get me started on podcast metrics and all that sort of stuff, because it's like, you know, it's slowly edged the independent creator out of the whether it's app development or media or whatever it might be. It's like, this is getting very close to capitalism versus other models and things like that. But it's just very, very frustrating. Why don't we move on and take a break and thank our next sponsor, our first sponsor of the evening. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. And listen, during this time of change and uncertainty in the world around us, we want you to know that ZipRecruiter's focus hasn't changed. They're still doing what they've always done, helping people find work and helping businesses find the right people for their open roles. So if you're looking for a job, ZipRecruiter is working with you to find the right job faster. They are dedicated to helping you get hired, from caretaking to delivering food and goods to building medical facilities, supplying protective equipment, and so much more. In fact, ZipRecruiter's app will send you up-to-date job openings so you can be one of the first to apply. And if you're actively hiring, ZipRecruiter will invite candidates to apply for your most urgent roles, making it faster and easier to reach the people you need. by connecting people who need jobs and companies that need people, ZipRecruiter is working with all of us so we can keep moving forward. Let's work together. So head over to ziprecruiter.com/work together. That's ziprecruiter.com/work together. And if you're looking for a gig or looking to hire people, ZipRecruiter is where you want to go. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of this episode.
Yes, indeed, we do. Thank you, ZipRecruiter, for sticking with us and for being with the Twit Network and All About Android. Thank you, guys. All right. We've got some hardware to check out in the Hardware Shack. Let's jump in. Ah, Burke, you nailed it. Right on.
I was hoping for him to press the wrong button in that regard, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Depends on who you ask then.
For us audio listeners, we saw the video bumper of Mateo's Hardware Shack, which featured a four-legged animal eating some flowers. And I was hoping with Victor not being here that Burke would be on the side of angels, but I guess not.
Nope.
Thank you for the good check.
Side of angels.
All right, so Mateo, you've got three devices. What you got?
Yes. So for this edition of the Speed Shack, I have three devices. Let's start off with the Nokia 1.3, which is the most affordable of the three, and I would say one of the most affordable Android smartphones on the market at the moment. So the Nokia 1.3 is a £60 to £70 smartphone, depending on where you purchase it in the UK. So it's just under $100 from Nokia, which are now is the brand of HMD Global. It's an Android Go edition smartphone based and running Android Go, the cut down version of Android made for entry level devices, and it's based on Android 10, so the latest version of Android. And what's really, really interesting about this is that it's also the first time we see the Camera Go app. So Google had been working on this for years, apparently, and it is an optimized version of the camera app that we see on the Pixel devices, which has been optimized for much lower cost hardware and hardware that is included in these low cost devices. And it's really impressive. Usually under $100 smartphones don't have decent cameras, and the camera experience is very, very laggy and not very nice. I'm surprised by how good this is, and also by how good the Nokia 1.3 is overall. When you have a $100 smartphone, you don't have great expectations. But what I was really surprised by here is not just the camera and how relatively snappy the device is. You get a lovely screen. So this is an HD screen, or a 720 by 1520 screen. It is really good for watching video. You can see good quality YouTube streams on the device. It's amazing how far Android Go devices have come in just a couple of years. So I'm still doing the full review of the device at the moment, but the Tech Travel Geeks have released a series of videos on the Tech Travel Geeks YouTube channel where we go through the Camera Go app. We have sample videos taking HD video with the device, as well as going through some other features of Android Go, such as dark modes, one of the most popular things that people have been requesting. So we go through all that. But overall, if you're looking to spend as little as possible on an Android smartphone and get as much as possible, the Nokia 1.3 is a great option. It has expandable storage. It comes with 16 gigabytes built in. It's 1 gigabyte of RAM, but with the Android Go, the cut-down apps, it's a great experience for the price compared to what we've seen in that market segment previously. And battery life is amazing. It's running on a Snapdragon 2 series chipset, which is a sort of repurposed Snapdragon 4 series from a couple of years ago. But overall, the battery life is really, really good. Low power chipset, but decent experience overall. So I think that's everything for the Nokia 1.3. We will be doing our full review in about a month's time when I've really put it through its paces. Moving on to the next device, Burke, I've got the Huawei P40 in the docket. So the Huawei P40 is not the flagship from Huawei, which is the Huawei P40 Pro, or the upcoming Huawei P40 Pro Plus, which is going to be released in June. It's the premium smartphone, which is part of the series that was launched as the Huawei P40 series. So if you think about it in Apple terms, this is the same as the standard iPhone 11. It's not the iPhone 11 Pro. It's just the standard one. And what I like about the Huawei P40 is that it's a really, really compact device. It has a 6.1-inch screen, but it really feels nice to hold. It's not a big device. Much the same way as Ron was saying that his wife is looking for a device that's the right size. This is a pretty much bezel-less screen with a cutout for a selfie camera. In the hand, this feels like a 4.7-inch iPhone SE. It is slightly bigger, but overall the experience is great. And it's not a curved screen. I hadn't realized how much I don't like curved screens in day-to-day use. There's a lot less mistakes you can make, typing, phantom touches, and so forth. And overall, the hardware is pretty amazing. Whether that's the battery, which is only a 3,800 milliamp hour battery, but with the new Kirin chipset and the MUI optimizations, overall, it's a really, really good smartphone. What I haven't said is, obviously, we are lacking Google Play services, and that involves also the Google Play Store. I went through a bit of a different setup than other reviewers. A lot of people were trying to use phone clone or sideload Google services. I embraced the fact that this is a Google-less phone and installed everything I could from the Huawei App Store, which for most people is what they actually want, the Facebook apps, the Amazon apps, and so forth. And then I also sideloaded or installed the Amazon App Store, which you can do so quite easily from the Amazon website, and got all the rest of the apps and services I needed on there. So I am using alternatives to the Google services. I'm using Google email addresses in the built-in IMAP email client. And I've also been using services like the Amazon Photo services to replace Google Photos, Amazon Music instead of Google Play Music or YouTube Music. And the overall experience is, it's decent. But if I want the pure Google apps, that's not really an option at the moment. When it comes to the camera on the Huawei P40 is very, very good. It's probably the easiest point-and-shoot camera I've used. And I say that whilst having used it side-by-side with an iPhone 11. The camera on the Huawei P40 is truly a really easy-to-use camera. It has a wide-angle lens. It does really good bokeh. Overall, fantastic camera. Sharing to apps like Facebook and Instagram isn't a problem. So things work. Just you have to bear in mind there's no Google Play services. It's not the Google experience many of the really strong, passionate Android fans like. So it will take a bit of a learning curve. On the other hand, if you're someone who's heavily invested in the Facebook ecosystem, so WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, that will do the job. So overall, the Huawei P40 is a great device. I haven't finished the review yet. I'm putting it through its paces. And I'll also be doing side-by-side comparison with the iPhone 11 as far as cameras are concerned. So it's just a shame that this is not available as widely as Huawei devices used to be. Its only downside, in my view, is that it doesn't have a full waterproof rating. It's an IP50 rating, and there's no wireless charging, so it's only charging over USB Type-C.
What is the price on that one, kind of roughly?
So in the UK, including tax, it's 699, so £700, exactly the same price as the very basic iPhone 11 model. The difference is you get expandable storage because it's using the Huawei Nano memory cards, and it has the entry level model has 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage, and the latest Kirin chipset, the Kirin 990. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's also a 5G device, but I haven't been able to test that because where I live and where I'm staying at home, we don't have 5G coverage at the moment. But from a 4G coverage standpoint, really good, really fast. It works on my 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, so I'm happy with that.
Nice.
And obviously we'll have more content on the Tech Travel Geeks website and the Tech Travel Geeks YouTube channel once we've finished that review. Hopefully after a bit of travel to put it through some handing off between cell phone towers and maybe doing some roaming as well, just to see how it handles that. And I think last for the speed shack of the day is another Chinese phone. Ron, can I hear you rolling your eyes?
Yeah, that's not okay still, but it is very shiny. It is a very shiny phone, but I don't think you can say that.
Okay, then. We'll agree to disagree on that. But the Xiaomi Redmi Note 9S is a much more affordable device. It's around about £200 sterling, so under $250 US. And unlike the Huawei P40, this is a big phone. So it's an almost 6.7-inch smartphone with four cameras on the back. This features the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon 720G chipset. So it's an 8-nanometer chipset, which is very power efficient. And it has a 5,000 milliamp-hour battery. I have not been able to run this device flat in 2 and a bit days since I got it. And I'm looking forward to seeing how long it actually lasts in day-to-day use. Now, one of the things that is quite positive about the Redmi is the big screen. So it has a big screen with a hole-punch selfie camera, and it really works well for streaming video. It really works well for video calls. I've really enjoyed using it so far. And it also has a side-mounted fingerprint scanner, which is quite useful, especially when we should all be using face masks if we go out and about. So overall, great device. USB Type-C, it comes with a fast charger in the box, all for under $250 US. Again, no wireless charging, no waterproof rating. It's splash-proof. But one of the most important things is it has a Courage port at the bottom.
Ah, the Courage. So
it
drink
has
it
the
up.
3.5-millimeter audio jack, as well as an infrared blaster at the top. So if you are traveling, if you're going in those hotels with grubby remote controls, you can just use your Xiaomi Redmi Note 9S to control the TV instead, which is a fun feature. And the quad camera setup on the back is a 48-megapixel main sensor with a dedicated macro sensor, with a dedicated depth sensor, and a wide-angle lens. So all the cameras that you will probably need, and the mystery, which is the dedicated macro camera to me. Have any of you really used a macro camera on a smartphone?
Yeah, try to find uses
really
for
like
it.
A macro.
I haven't.
I'm a big fan of the macro shot. Like, sometimes you're walking down the street, you see some flowers or something like that. Like, sure, you could take the picture from far away and it looks okay. But having that, like, creative ability to get really close to it and get it nice and close and in focus and everything with a good macro, like, I love the shots that I can get. Sometimes it's super cool. But it's not something you use every single day, though, with your camera. That's the thing. But neither do you use the color filter on a OnePlus 8 Pro every single day. So sometimes I suppose it's kind of nice to just have the option. But
cool. There you go. Yeah. And so that was my speed check.
But well done, Mateo.
Say, in terms of overall experience, obviously you get what you pay for. We've seen three different phones in three different categories here. One thing is for sure, despite the limitations of the low end of the market, the overall experience compared to even just a couple of years ago on an inexpensive phone has got gradually better. The justification for a $1,000 plus smartphone is starting to be a bit questionable at this point.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah. And this is the right year for that. For that question to continue to persist. We're going to see a lot more of that throughout the course of this year. Mateo's Speed Hardware Shack. Thank you, Mateo, for all three of those devices. Everybody that wants to find the reviews, of course, go to techtravelgeeks.com. Those will be posted soon.
Great. Thank you.
All right. So I wanted to touch really quickly on some news that I saw earlier that Walmart has a new low-cost series of tablets. You may remember, I think, what was it, a year ago that Walmart had the On tablet that was released, and I got super curious because I can't remember how much it was. It was like $50 or something for like a 10-inch tablet. I was like, okay, how good is this really for $50? And I went, got one, did a review for Hands on Tech. You can find it twit.tv/HOT. Well, now Walmart has updated the series. So they've got an 8-inch On 8 Tablet Pro, which is $99. They say it has an HD display and 2 gigs of RAM. Then they have the 10-inch one. It's a 10-inch On, 10.1 Tablet Pro for $129. It has an FHD display and 3 gigs of RAM. Both have 2 gigahertz octa-core processors, very likely to be MediaTek system on chip, which is what the previous one had. And I've found it to be a horrible performer in that regard, so keep that in mind. Both have 32 gigs of storage, headphone jack, micro SD card, Google Play services, of course, USB-C, Android 10. And if it's anything like the one that I used a year ago, it's very close to stock. The only change is that the little navigation bar has a little Walmart button on it that when you press it, it takes you to like a folder of Walmart apps. It's down on the left side. So you might not like that. But I did find a Redditor who bought one of these and said, hey, what do you know? You can go into the settings and you can actually remove that button very easily. You don't have to hack into it to do it. You can change the navigation settings and get rid of it. So at least there's that. Are we interested in the On 10 tablet?
Look at Walmart being like user friendly. That's fantastic. I mean, it's hard to argue a low price tablet to get in people's hands to, you know, to watch for media devices and things like that. It does, like we talked about when we reviewed it the first time around, it definitely has a purpose. And given that Walmart has invested in streaming services and things like that, there are people who that's their ecosystem. So why not have a tablet for them?
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. And this actually gives me flashbacks back to 2013, 2014. In the UK, the supermarket Tesco had exactly the same thing. It had its ecosystem of services and apps and its own brand tablet, the Tesco Huddle tablets. I believe I reviewed one on All About Android back in 2014. So these devices have purpose just as much as the Amazon Fire tablets do. There is a market for this. Not everyone needs a high-end device, depending on what they're doing. This might be the perfect BBC iPlayer or video streaming service device for use on the sofa or use in bed.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what a device like this is kind of best for. You're not going to get this for gaming. You're not going to get this for high performance. Even the one that I reviewed a year ago, you might not even get that for media consumption unless you were giving it to like your kid who has very, you know, a lot less discriminating eyeballs because it just didn't look very good. At least on these, they have a high def display, so you have to imagine it's going to look okay. So you could throw a Netflix on here or watch your YouTube and have a larger screen to have it on. For that,
I wonder if the tablet that you reviewed last year was the right idea too soon, and now these displays have become more affordable and they got the $99 price point, all this sort of stuff, and maybe now is the time for the On tablet. On tablet.
Oh, man. Does that mean I have to get one of these on tablets? I think in order to get it, though, you have to go into the store. You can't order this online, if I'm not mistaken. So then I'd have to, like, walk into Walmart.
Well, they probably have curbside pickup now. Like, you could probably do that. Yeah, there you go. There it is.
Wait, Jason. You still have the on tablet from last year?
Yeah, I still have it somewhere. I meant to pull it out.
So there's no onception mode of ordering an on tablet from an existing on tablet.
Oh, you could. I mean, he could maybe. On an inception. So
I mean, it's worth investigating. It's definitely worth an article on a site somewhere.
For sure. If only one of us was a freelance writer.
Oh boy.
Peoplewalmart.com.
All right, well, let's move on to some email. And as we're talking about streaming content and watching media, we got a little ranty recently about Chromecast last week on the show, and Marquis Moore wrote in and said, I've been using Chromecast daily since it came out many years ago. I've had the same issues mentioned on the show. And for those who didn't listen or watch last week, we were talking about how Chromecast could, you know, lose the connection and just become very, you know, like the sitting down and watching an hour long program was a challenge because of that, and lots of problems. So Marquis goes on to say, when the Chromecast Ultra came out with the power adapter that included an Ethernet port, I thought all my problems were solved. Wrong. The disconnect issues persisted. I agree that there are issues with Chromecast implementation on apps, particularly around the terrible HBO Go / HBO Now apps. Something that wasn't mentioned that actually helped me was turning off battery optimization for all Chromecast-enabled apps. I suspect due to the various ways Chromecast was implemented within apps and the many versions of Android floating around, that the battery optimization is breaking the connection between the phone and the Chromecast device. And that is fantastic advice. And if I hadn't given up on Chromecast, I'd give it a shot and try it. But now I moved over to Android TV, where I never have this problem. But if you are using Chromecast, definitely look into turning off battery optimization for those enabled apps. That could be one of the things to help it. So really, really, really good tip there. Thank you, Marquis.
And I wish I had put it in there, because Marquis was not the only person to write with this. There was another emailer who wrote in with the similar tip. So thank you to you both. Great tip there. Definitely something to check out next time you're experiencing that, or just do it now and maybe you'll never experience it again. Who knows?
I wonder how many other things are floating around in the OS, like battery optimization, that would affect the way these apps run or things like that. So if you have another tip that's not battery optimization that helps you get a more stable Chromecast, make sure to email us. You can email us at aaa@twit.tv. That's aaa@twit.tv. We want to hear from you. All right. Cool.
That's right. Please do. All right. Coming up in the apps block, we're going to devote the entire time to our thoughts and opinions on YouTube Music compared to Google Play Music. Most of us, 3 out of 4 of us, have gotten in. We're going to talk all about it and give you kind of first-hand perspective on that. But first, this episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Health and safety is on the top of everyone's minds right now. No matter what happens, you want to make sure that your loved ones are protected. And that's why LegalZoom continues to provide a reliable way for everyone to set up the right estate plan without leaving your home. It's super easy. My wife and I did this years ago. We set this up through LegalZoom before I even worked at Twit, before they were ever a sponsor. And it was the easiest thing in the world to do. LegalZoom just makes this process that you kind of assume is going to be challenging. They make it a lot easier. It starts with finding the answers to your questions. Do you need a last will and testament or a living trust? What about an advanced healthcare directive? And what's a power of attorney? Thankfully, you don't have to figure all this stuff out on your own. LegalZoom's online resources make it easy to get started. And if you need to speak to an attorney, their independent attorney network is there to guide and advise you. LegalZoom is not a law firm, so you're not going to have to worry about expensive billable hours all adding up. So no worries there. You can take an important step for your family today by going to LegalZoom.com. You can get started on a last will, living trust, and more. Or you can find out how you can speak to an attorney for advice on the right estate plan. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. Go to LegalZoom.com and check it out for yourself. And we thank LegalZoom for their support. All right. So, well, if we've got the apps bumper, we might as well roll it, because this is one big apps section devoted to YouTube Music. Mm-hmm.
All right, this is going to be something. I hope everybody's buckled in. Because, wow.
Dun, dun, dun. So we got... most of us got our in, right?
Yeah, so the day, at least the day after, so last week, the day after we did the show, when we honestly had a great time talking with, now I'm blanking on his name. Brandon. We had a great time talking with Brandon. I'm sorry. We had a great time talking with Brandon from YouTube, from Google and YouTube about YouTube Music. Then the next day I got my transfer note, and was able to transfer my Google Play Music library, which I think was in and around like 45,000 songs were in my library. It went by the transfer. They said it might take a few hours. I didn't time it, but when I went back to check on it, it was done. And I was like, oh, that's great. And sure enough, when I opened up the app in the library section, I saw it populated with all my stuff, which is awesome. And then I dove into the app and that happened.
You got lost.
I didn't get lost. I immediately got frustrated. I don't know. Jason, what was your experience like?
Yeah, I mean, I've been spending time with it, just trying through like osmosis to understand, just to understand the logic behind some of the choices. Some of the stuff really doesn't make any sense to me. And yeah, I really want it to work because, okay, great. So when you say feature parity, and by the way, I don't believe that, but air quotes feature parity, between Google Play Music and YouTube Music, I'm like, okay, well then there's nothing stopping me other than just trying it because now everything's over there. My full library is there. I gotta say, the full integration of search that kind of in Google Play Music, you had the online library that Google maintained, and then you had your own library and how it was all intermixed into one kind of cohesive experience. If I do a search for this band, it pulls me results from both places. If I'm looking at a band and all the albums, it shows me all the albums, not just the ones that I've got, you know, in my uploaded library, and not just the ones, you know, it combines everything. So it removes this layer of like confusion of where am I going to find this? Where am I going to find that? And you do not get that in YouTube Music. And from a usability standpoint, that goes a really long way for me to just kind of not enjoying the experience.
I think it's almost like they ghettoized my music. That's what it feels like because if you go – so if you're in the app, you know, there are three navigation tabs along the bottom, right? There's the – and actually, you know, Burke, if you want to share my screen, I can illustrate what I'm talking about here. I'll be happy to do that. I'm streaming now. The link is in the arena. If you go to my app there.
Right.
I could
– in the red block in the arena. So just start talking. Burke, you'll get there.
Yeah. In the app itself, on the bottom of the navigation, you get home, explore, and library, right? So those are three, you know, and here we are. This is my YouTube Music. This is the main thing. And I've got a couple of interesting examples here. But here along the bottom, you see you got home, explore, and library, right? So on the home, you're getting a whole bunch of recommendations that, you know, the moment I transferred my library, these came over and were relevant. You know, like Quicksand's one of my favorite bands, Fugazi, one of my favorite bands. So getting stuff that is similar to it. What I immediately noticed was that, you know, similar to Quicksand is Fugazi, 6,220,000 subscribers. I was like, what does that mean? And so I tapped through on the band and realized like, oh, you have to subscribe to it the same way you subscribe to a YouTube channel, which was just somewhat baffling to me just from a concept standpoint. But whatever, I'll go with it, right? But then when you continue to scroll through, it's like, all right, well, Band of Quicksand, you know, Fugazi, Helmet, Bad Brains, 1,000 homo DJs. I've never even heard of that, right?
There's
some weird stuff that crops up in it because what makes me worry is like exactly what's going on in this algorithm. But what I would get at is if I go to library on the right side, and if I go in, you know, and here I can see my library and it's telling me the last things that I played, and here I can go to my albums, and this is where the ghetto happens, where you get up tabs up at the upper part that divvy up YouTube Music uploads, which is my library that I uploaded, you know, to Google Play all those while ago, and then files on your device. So it's building that wall between what is considered YouTube music and what is your uploads. And that intermingling doesn't happen anymore, which is immensely frustrating. And then additionally, there is no way to just scroll through my library. Like if I want to go by artists, it is literally just artists at a glance. Primary artists or albums or songs in your library will show up here. Like one of my favorite things, one of my favorite things about iTunes back in the day was that I could just scroll through and look at album covers and look at my collection. And it was like the feeling of flipping through the CD bin or the vinyl bin or whatever. And with this, unless I'm searching for a specific band or a specific song, that serendipity of getting lost in my own collection feels like it's gone.
That is a really, really good point. You put words to kind of what I was feeling here, because I totally agree. In Google Play Music, I can open that up and get stacks and stacks of covers. It's like the album art cover is a big focus in the UI experience in Google Play Music and a lot of the other apps that are out there. Here, it really gets kind of buried, and especially if you're going through any of your collection. I mean, everything's so small. Like you said, you really got to know exactly what you're looking for. There's no kind of like going in there and running across something and going, oh, yeah, that gives me a feeling right now that I want to listen to it. Like that just doesn't really happen. Also, you mentioned the subscribe to an artist. What exactly does that do? Because anything that I had added to my library in Google Play Music is now in YouTube Music under the YouTube Music tab. Right. So it's there permanently. I couldn't remove it if I wanted to. But yet if I go into the artist that's there, if I'm in artists in YouTube Music and I go into that artist, it still says that I'm not subscribed to that artist. So when I subscribe to it, what exactly am I doing?
Yeah, you have to subscribe. You have to subscribe to artists that are already in your library, which seems baffling. My sense is that the subscription piece of it will feed into your various algorithms and playlists and things like that that they're suggesting. But they're not doing a good. They're not giving you a reason to tap on that subscribe button. They're not telling you why or what it might be.
So is this going to be some sort of future SEO for music? So when they lay down the tune with a bass solo at the beginning of a track, they might be whispering or shouting out, like and subscribe.
I hope not.
Someone Jason, might actually here. Do that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
So I have two other notes, and then I know Flo played with it a bit. And I want to hear from her. But like one of the things that frustrates me is that like the context understanding within the algorithm, which is frustrating. Like, and when Brandon was on, they love we know you're at the gym, so we're gonna play you gym like music, and you know it's morning, so it's gonna be more chill stuff. And I get that, but what they've done is they've got these, you know, context things like romantic moods, and whoever is curating this and making one called Punk Rock Love, and look at that stock photo of a punk and a girl. Mm-hmm. Like as someone who considers myself to have grown up punk, like that's not me. Like that doesn't resonate. Like that seems like pandering. Right. And then what's also interesting is that if you look at my library, it is clear to see what the kind of music that I like is, right? And what the interesting things are. And so that's why I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, cool. They're recommending top artists, top songs. Sonic Youth, Oasis, great. Home Runs, those are excellent. Drake, no, right? DJ Khaled, no. T-Pain, like there's no, like it's proving to me that they're not looking at what my likes are and what my interests are. And then, you know, by suggesting, like now we're in chill out mode, but earlier there was like happy hour music, and it was all these like 2000s R&B jams. And if you like show me the algorithm that is going through my library and the artists that I brought over and tell me that I have any interest in 2000s R&B music at all, because there's nothing in there. And then finally, the thing that just baffled me, and actually Burke, if you want to go, I have a screenshot that I loaded because I didn't realize I was going to do this, but I did a quick radio based on, you know, just, you know, like I said, oh great, David Bowie, let's see what this gives me. And it plays a David Bowie song, and then the next song up is American Pie by Don McLean. And I was like, really? Okay, so they're both in the 70s. I get that. But as someone who's listening to David Bowie, I'm not really into American Pie. But then it gets back to, you know, to Lou Reed and to Velvet Underground and Blondie. And you scroll through. And if you scroll down, you know, we get a little Talking Heads. That's great. And then it gives me Touch of Grey by the Grateful Dead. Okay, so show me anybody who's listening. Yeah, who's listening to Bowie and the Velvet Underground? Who's actually would want to hear a Grateful Dead song? So like, it just feels like they're putting the energy of the algorithm, the energy of what Google and YouTube can do, with none of the human influence and none of the way people really listen to music or the way people really consume music. And it's that context, you know. And it's like the other example I gave when I shared with you guys is that I started a radio station based off Superchunk, right? Classic alt rock college. Alt rock, you know, great thing. The second song was a song from Earth, Wind and Fire, which is just like, okay, you got 90s and 2000s college rock and 70s, you know, like it. And the other thing that gets me is that there's no way to go through and say, no, I don't want that, you know, because it's only binary. It's like or don't like. And again, it goes back to that context where there might be some sort of mix where it's picked up that I've listened to Fleetwood Mac before, but I'm listening to a bunch of other music and Fleetwood Mac gets recommended. And I might say, no, I don't want Fleetwood Mac in this context, but I'll listen to Fleetwood Mac later on. And as far as I can tell, that nuance is in there. So they're biting off a lot with this. And I think it's hard to do it right it's easy to whiteboard the concept, but then in the execution, it falls apart, at least in my opinion.
Indeed. Flo, what are your thoughts?
So I have thoughts of this as a longtime Spotify user. Funny enough, the Google Play library that I transferred over to YouTube Music is the last bit of music that I had in 2011. So the library that I uploaded was that library from 9 years ago, which was a very different flow, very different time of my life. And also the trends of music that I was listening to was very different. I mean, I'm really like into synthwave and chill hop these days. And back then I was listening to a lot more indie pop and that sort of thing. So it was hard for me to get on the pulse of whether or not the algorithm was, you know, knowing what I wanted. But I did kind of get a look into how this algorithm tries to work. So I also brought a little gallery today, class. I brought a gallery for show and tell and kind of to walk you through what my transfer experience was. So I did this all through the browser. And Burke, whenever you have a chance, there's a link in the doc to a Google Photos album, and we can just go through that from you start as a slideshow and go through that. So the first three photos kind of show what the transfer process is like. And basically, you go to the URL, you click on a button that says transfer music, and then it starts the process of bringing over your Google Play Music library to YouTube Music. Okay, fine. That works. Okay. And then you go to the next bit and you wait. You wait for a little bit. You wait for a lot, depending on how big your library is. My library, much smaller than Ron's on Google Play Music. I was in the 10K sort of environment. Not 10K, excuse me. Actually, probably less than that environment. So a little under that. And again, this is all music from 2011. So it was all stuff I used to listen to. So I didn't even know that the transfer process was finished until I checked my email to see that there was confirmation from Google that from YouTube Music that my library had transferred over. And so I get in there. And then, Burke, there's a photo of that recommendation engine. So I kind of went in there and I noticed, first of all, wow, this really looks like Spotify, down to the backgrounds that they use on these playlists. I'm just saying it looks very similar. Now, maybe Spotify, their design is slightly different, but it's still the same concept of like there's an artist in the background. There's like bright color that's supposed to kind of give you an idea of what the genre is. So pop music, very bright, very like inviting. Country music, like kind of has a red brown tinge to it, that kind of thing. So I was like, wow, okay, this is very, very much on par with what Spotify tries to do. And then below it, it was suggesting to me, I listened to some, I'm sorry, Burke, that I'm jumping back and forth here. But below it, they had offered me some stress relief playlists, which this is around, I think I took the screenshot around 2 o'clock or something like that. I was wondering where it might have gotten the suggestions to give me lo-fi, chill indie, 90s rap and R&B, because I've actually been listening to this music, but not through Spotify. I've been listening through, because I'm so kind of disenchanted with these algorithms that exist on Spotify and on Google Play Music, I pay for digitally imported. And they have a bunch of apps that you unlock with it, with the membership. And I use that for radio. And I find it to always kind of live up to my expectations. And so I wondered where it might have gotten the idea that I wanted that particular music. Then I thought about the fact that this is tied to YouTube. And I have been down some rabbit holes for chill hop, for lo-fi, to try and find some chill stuff to listen to. And I realized, like, I'm wondering if this is pulling in from what I was doing.
It is.
YouTube playlist. Yes.
It is. Because that reminds me, I ran into another thing where I started, it was off of the homepage. I forget what triggered it, but it was here's a mix of things you like. And there were 3 songs of legit bands I like. And then it went into a 25-minute live set from one of the bands I like that was on a YouTube video. And then an 18-minute live set from another band I like that's a YouTube video. And it was just all live footage of YouTube. It was exactly the thing I asked about last week when we talked to Brandon, where it mixed in MP3s, it mixed in songs with live footage from YouTube and treated them exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I do want to end off just to kind of, I did take a little screen recording, which Burke was on kind of a second ago. Burke, it's that last little video. It's about 2 minutes, so you can run it as just B-roll. But basically what it is I went in and I started manually adding things. And I realized that when I'm adding, like Ron's experience, I'm actually subscribing to these YouTube pages. And so what I did is I went in and I looked for some of the artists that I listen to now, and I added them to my library. I checked out a couple playlists to see how these genres, you know, if they are kind of similar to what I get on Spotify. And I noticed, okay, same bit of artist here as on Spotify. Okay, we're staying in that genre. Then I pressed play. And instead of just playing the song, I hear the fans in my laptop ramp up and it's playing the video, the actual video from the band that exists on their YouTube page. And then when I go in to the app, again, I'm doing all this through the browser. I did not use the Android app to test this. I did this through Google Chrome. I'm looking through what is effectively video playlists from these artists, and I still have the video playing in a little window the same way it would on YouTube. And that just immediately made me want to just get away from the screen, go back to Spotify. It was just,
you know, what's funny? You know, what's funny is that I just based on you saying that, Flo, I'm like, let me go over to YouTube and look at my YouTube home screen with the same account, because I haven't looked at it since I interacted with music. And I know these recommendations from YouTube really well, because with the kids, I'm constantly, we're put up YouTube stuff just to entertain and all this sort of stuff. And now I'm seeing in my recommendations, I'm seeing music videos from the artists that I subscribe to in YouTube Music, and they have a little music note next to them now. And so I am seeing results in YouTube based off my behavior in YouTube Music showing up on the YouTube side.
See, that's the thing. There's just so much. I understand what the idea was here, but there's so much integration with YouTube that I'm just immediately feeling a lot of trepidation about it. I mean, I love to go to YouTube and watch music videos. Like, I'm still into that. I want to see the full creativity.
But those are different things. It's a different experience.
Exactly. It's like having podcasts in your music player. It's great for the convenience factor when you want to create a playlist of sorts, but I don't want to have to immediately go from one experience to another if I'm not in the mood for it, and I don't want it in there. And maybe that's a purist's take. Maybe that makes me old school, or maybe it's just the fact that these are different mediums, and, you know, it would... It's going to take a lot to kind of get me to feel like that is the experience that I want compared to what I've had all this time with Spotify and other online radio. So, yeah, that's how I'm feeling. Yeah.
I'm not feeling very good about it, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm feeling super nervous about it. And I'm going to give it more time because I kind of feel like a part of me has to. Right. So I'm going to give it more time, but there's still a whole lot of features that are missing. You know, Android Auto support is not there. There's a whole list of things that's like a head scratcher.
I will say that I immediately jumped from YouTube Music and I loaded up Plex Amp and I started a radio based on Superchunk and I didn't get any Earth, Wind & Fire.
And that is a win. Mateo, when this opens up to other parts of this planet Earth, are you going to jump on? I'm sure you'll probably check it out, but what do you think based on what you've seen?
Yes, I'll probably jump on to YouTube Music. In a way, I've already been flip-flopping between Google Play Music with my music, my playlists and so forth, and YouTube Music, which has different selections of music, which I quite enjoy. So musically, I'm a bit of an outsider. I really only listen to music in a narrow window of time between 1996 and 2002. So as far as I'm concerned, all good music is pop from that period of time, and that's it. But I have discovered new music through Google Play Music occasionally. Stuff like Yellow Gold Music and a few other indie bands that I had never heard of, but I found them on Google Play Music. Quiet plug there to Jason. But one of the things that I do enjoy YouTube Music for is a lot of live experiences or live recordings. So things like the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain, one of my favorite musical entertainments, is pretty much only available on YouTube. And through YouTube Music, I can use it on my G Home services, and I can ask it to play that, and it will play that music. So I've been flip-flopping between the two. I hope that by the time I'm invited to, a lot of these issues that we've just described have been solved. What I'm going to be interested to see is how successful it is, and if there will be behavioral changes driven by, as we've said, subscriptions, likes, and other things to surface new music. Part of the whole thing about music is discovering new content. Yep. And that is going to be a behavioral change, not only on the provider of the service, but the people who create the content. So this is definitely one for conversation on This Week in Google going forward. But it will be interesting to follow this through time and see how that happens.
You touched on something that I forgot to mention on, which is the discovery aspect is completely broken or not working. And it was exactly what I was worried about, was like, if you go in the Explore tab and then in the app at the very top of it, there's a button for new releases and you tap on that new releases and it is just – it's literally in a section called albums and singles, and it is just a mishmash, like literally. And I was excited because I saw there's a new record from one of my favorite bands, is that there's the Magnetic Fields have a new record. I was like, oh cool. And it's literally next to a single by Katy Perry, right? Which is like, you know, and if you know, which is literally next to a single from the Jonas Brothers, which, you know, like, and as somebody who, and I get it, I know I'm a music snob, I know I'm the high fidelity type, and, you know, I'm gonna go listen to my vinyl and all this sort of stuff, but you want to, you know, like, there are a lot of people like me as well too, and I never want to see a Jonas Brothers record recommended in any capacity. I want to see new releases organized by genre. I want to separate singles from albums. I want, and it's just like, well, they're like, well, people are gonna want new releases, dump them all there because we don't think that's important, so we're gonna deprioritize it. And it just, and like, that's the experience that I want. That's how I want to discover new music. Be like, oh, what came out? Like, what, you know, what hardcore records came out this week? Oh, awesome. Like, you know, and then go from there. I don't have to, you know, sift through a bunch of, you know, stuff that isn't catered to me when you're the company that caters content to me and do it very well in other capacities. So it's very frustrating. Sorry. All right. I'll stop ranting.
Yeah, no, the risk here is that we have a sort of music service fragmentation that musicians and music creators will need to choose one platform over another. And it will be back to the good old days of 2002 when I had to import Jennifer Page's new album from Germany, from Amazon Germany, because it just wasn't available in the UK. It wasn't considered a viable market for the music label. Therefore, we had to jump through hoops. It may be that people will be doing the same with new music going forward.
Yeah.
All right, I'm screen sharing again, Burke. If you want to show I can show you what I was talking about with the new release kind of experience, just so we have a little context for our video viewers. So there, I'm here in the app. I hit the Explorer button at the bottom, and you, up top you see new releases, but you also see new albums and singles. And you know, here there's the Katy Perry single. You know, Jonas Brothers, right? It's not even show. There's the Magnetic Fields. There's the band that I was talking about. You know, and then you go to see all, and it goes to the section where it's just all dumped in a way that is not, there's no way to navigate by genre. There's no way to filter by album or by single. It just, and also this line, this ends, this, you can scroll all the way to the bottom of this and, or the other day, oh, well, okay. It's got a little more results, but the other day it ended after like 20 records. And I was like, really, that's it? It just seems like they just completely disregarded the need for this.
No. Yeah, it really feels just as a whole de-emphasizes albums, the idea of an album. I mean, that's been a big discussion in music, you know, over the past many years is, you know, the importance of a single and individual tracks now that we're listening to things in digital form. You know, iPods kind of started this. Well, maybe albums are being de-emphasized and it's all about individual tracks. You know, I get an album, I don't listen start to finish. Maybe that's their thinking here, but it misses the mark for me as far as what I want out of a music app. It makes the whole process just frustrating and very unsatisfying. And I want, when I'm in the mode for music, like I want a satisfying user experience. I want to know how to navigate it and that it's tailoring what I'm looking for. And I don't get that with YouTube Music. I'm going to continue trying to play with it, but right now I'm not getting it. And if I continue feeling this way, I'm totally jumping ship. And that's a bummer. Because yep. I actually really like Google Play Music. Here we are again, inbox. Dang it. Google.
Jeez. Here we are again, Reader.
Yes, Reader. Oh, my goodness. Why? Okay.
Google Wave. Just kidding.
Google Wave. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's take a break. Thank the sponsor, and then we'll get into the arena and talk about some apps we do like. This episode of All That Android is brought to you by LastPass. It is always important to have a plan for the unexpected. LastPass can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to ensure your business keeps running smoothly and every employee login is secure. Single sign-on, of course, manages employee access in a centralized view, so IT has insight info all the time into who has access to what and from where. You can enterprise password management also ensures oversight of shadow IT and enforceable policies across all password protected accounts. Multi-factor authentication, of course, requires additional factors to prove a user's identity, while the use of biometric and contextual factors makes the process smooth for employees. Because you want to keep things easier for people to use, but you still want that added security that multi-factor provides. Businesses should be thinking about additional layers of defense beyond just the password, and that's where LastPass comes in. LastPass does not send or store the master password. If LastPass can't access your data, well, hackers can't either. Encryption happens exclusively at the device level before syncing to LastPass for safe storage, so only users can decrypt their data. They use 256-bit AES encryption that is the same encryption type utilized by banks and the military. LastPass protects while providing a seamless workflow for your employees. Account access and passwords can be shared securely between employees, whether they happen to be in the office or even if they're remote like we all seem to be these days. Employees will get secure access to their work applications with SSO and password management, and there's an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication, so employees can always have access to what they need. And we use LastPass here at Twit. I've used it personally for a number of years. It's just a really great way to keep things secure, to keep your password health top of mind, and to keep it easy enough to practice good password management. LastPass can help make remote work simple and secure. Visit LastPass.com/twit, and you can find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what happens. That's LastPass.com/twit. We thank LastPass for their support of All About Android. And now it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Looking at last week's poll, or results rather, it was close between Just Boggle and Pulsar, but Just Boggle edged out a win with 39% of the vote. Pulsar just behind, two votes shy at 38%.
Yeah.
So that's second place. Third place, Dolbion at 12%, and fourth place, Quick Cursor at 9%.
That's fair. So some interesting results based on that. Through 19 weeks in the arena, Jason and Flo are currently tied for first with 48 points. And with me coming in last, I am now tied in that last week's poll. I'm now tied with the guests for second place or last place, depending on how you want to count, with 41 points. So really fascinating. Two ties at the same time amongst four people. It's fascinating. Good stuff. So that means I go first. So I'm going to restart screen sharing. This week I've got a pretty easy app that is great. It's going to change your life, and it's nicely designed as well. It is called Rotation Manager, Screen Orientation Manager. And, you know, in the past we've looked at these kind of Rotation Manager apps, but this is the latest entry to it. I was really impressed by it. So what it allows you to do is it allows you to apply app-specific rules to screen rotation, which is great because I love to keep my phone in auto-rotate mode, and I curse every time I open Slack and it pops into landscape mode, not portrait, and I go, ah! Now with this, I can set Slack to always be portrait and not landscape, and no matter what mode my phone currently is in, which is fantastic. So real simple here. I don't know, Burke, if you've got my screen up there, I can show everyone who's watching on the video. Once you do all of the permissions, you give it accessibility rules and stuff like that. When you open it up, what you get is you see the up top, you see the apps that you currently have settings for. I currently have settings for Slack. And then you can have you see a rundown of all of your apps in alphabetical order. And now let's say I want to change the CBS app, CBS All Access, where I watch The Good Fight and Picard. You just flip the switch. And it comes up with a little dialogue that says, do you want it to be on auto-rotate, portrait, or landscape? I'm going to choose landscape and hit close. And then you'll see now that the app appears up top as one of the apps that I'm managing, which is great. It's all very simple. And so now if I go there to the settings, very standard settings module, I can choose to enable the default rotation mode. So basically whenever you exit an app, it will be no change to the existing rotation mode. Of course, it's got a dark theme, which is great. Everybody loves a dark theme. And then, of course, it also has a notification that can give you a notification for a changed rotation mode from the configured app. So really, really simple, really nice, elegantly designed, easy to use. Rotation Manager, Screen Orientation Manager should replace whatever you're using for your app-level screen rotations. There you go, free in the Google Play Store.
Love it. Some apps you want to rotate and some apps you don't. That's what that app is all about, Rotation Manager. Good pick. My app is, it's no stranger to people who have watched or listened to All About Android and basically the Twit Network in the past, but it's never been in the arena, and they are not sponsors now. They were once sponsors on the network. It's Headspace, and I'm bringing it up today. It's kind of a little timely. first of all, over the last couple of years, I've gotten very into meditation. I've found it to be very effective to just kind of putting me in the right headspace, to be honest. No pun intended. At the start of each and every day, I do it every day, and I love it. And Headspace is one of a few apps that I use on a regular basis. But the reason I'm bringing it up today is, aside from the fact that it's designed really well, and there is a whole host of really useful meditations throughout that are all themed and grouped according to what you might be using a meditation app for. You know, maybe you're really stressed out and you want to relax, or maybe you're worried and you want to have meditations that have you, you know, kind of explore that a little bit, or maybe you just want a silent meditation where you can kind of go in wherever you want to go and not be guided through it. Headspace just has a whole bunch of different avenues that you can go down. So it's really great from that perspective. But they have a free version, which includes 10 basic meditations, 3 everyday meditations that I think change. They also have a whole section for falling back to sleep, winding down, that sort of stuff that you get for free. But right now, they have opened up their app in a couple of ways based on the moment in time that we happen to be right now with COVID-19 and sheltering in place and all this stuff. First of all, they have select meditations that are free during the COVID-19 moment that we happen to be in, however long that extends, called Weathering the Storm. And that has a number of meditations that might be useful for you. You know, maybe if you're dealing with anxiety, that sort of stuff. They've got a number of them in there that are completely free. So added on top of the normal free plan that are very good. And I can't remember his name, but the guy who does these, who walks you through these meditations, he's really good at what he does. But I think it was just today they announced that if you happen to find yourself unemployed right now as a result of everything that's going on right now, I don't even think you have to prove that it's a result of anything going on right now. It's just you have to, you know, fill out a form and let them know, yes, I am unemployed. They will give you 1 year free Headspace Plus membership. So you get access to everything basically for the year, which I just think is a really great thing for a company like Headspace to do. Yes, it's going to get eyeballs and it's going to get, you know, people to listen to the meditations and actually use the app and everything like that. But when you're talking about a moment in time where people are really thirsting or craving some support and some help through everything that's going on right now from a mental perspective, emotionally, all that kind of stuff, I can think of a few ways that, you know, that would be really helpful to help people in that situation out. One of them is meditation. And this is a really great way to get access to some tools that are excellent, in my opinion, and to get it for free. And it's just what a sign of goodwill to say, hey, you're unemployed right now. Here's a way to kind of help you through it. I just think it's a really great thing that they've done. So it's called Headspace. Check it out. They do have, like I said, the free aspects to it. Otherwise, if you're paying for it, you're not unemployed, it's $12.99 a month, or you can pay for the year, $69.99 for the year. That works out to about $583 a month. And again, it's a commitment. Something you got to kind of commit to really feel the difference from doing something like this. But I can speak from my own experience. It certainly helps me. And so maybe it'll help you. So check it out. It's called Headspace. And you can find it in the Play Store. All right, Mateo, you are up next. What you got?
Okay, then. So I am going to break with tradition again and go where no goat has been before. So I have chosen a Star Trek game, which is Star Trek Fleet Command. So Star Trek Fleet Command is a massively multiplayer online game with a twist to it. It's based on the Star Trek franchise, and even though we are in Star Wars month, I'm quite comfortable with being a fan of both franchises without living in denial. So what happens is with the Star Trek Fleet Command game, you are put in an independent part of space in between the Federation, the Klingons, and the Romulans, and there is also the presence of the Augments. And you need to build up your space station, your fleet of ships, and gradually build up your presence and choose a side. So I've been playing this game for around about 6 months when I got the Doogee S68 Pro. And I've been playing it a bit daily, almost like Jason is using Headspace. And it's a fun, fun game. But there's nothing really revolutionary about the game. It's the usual, you have three base resources that become six with their variants. You can create alliances. You have shields. You're encouraged to do in-app purchases to get boosts, to boost your competitiveness. And it's just a fun game. The fun thing about it is also that you have multiple Star Trek timelines. So if you're a fan of the original Shatner, Captain Kirk, that doesn't necessarily live in denial of the newer Captain Kirk. And you can, because of all the different timelines in the Star Trek universe, ultimately have three different ships all captained by different Captain Kirks. It's quite fun in that way. And you have to collect officers. You need to train them and upgrade them just as you do upgrade your ships. And then the online part of it is fun because you create alliances and actually interact with people. And it's a pleasant environment. There aren't any very nasty people. I haven't encountered any untoward behavior in the thing, so it seems to be well policed. And it's a generally fun multiplayer game in an open universe. So I would recommend trying it out. You don't have to make any in-app purchases, but there are some available if you really want that competitive boost. And yeah, that's where No Goat has been before. Star Trek Fleet Command.
I'm not convinced that there isn't a goat hidden away somewhere inside that app. Why else would you bring it to the arena? I'm serious.
Well, if you look at the Enterprise upside down and turn your head, it kind of looks like a goat.
Oh. Well, okay.
There it is. Yeah, there it is. There you go. The FC. Do you see it? Do you see it?
Kind of. I don't know. Yep. I feel like I'm watching that scene from Superman where the people are trapped in the screen.
Oh, no. So that's the Phantom Zone. Yet another franchise.
There we go. Okay, good. Mateo, we have you right where we want you. All right. All right, Burke's going a little wild right now. I love it.
Well done, Burke.
Excellent. Star Trek Fleet Command. Flo, you are rounding us out. What you got?
I am. And actually, if you'll just give me a quick second, because I did not move fast enough, but I'm going to start my screen share. And while I'm starting that, I'm going to tell you about the app that I brought today. Now, some of you may be at home and you're still working and you miss having a coworker to bounce grammar and writing off of. Well, the good news is that you don't need a coworker to do that. You can just do that with an app, thanks to the magic of artificial intelligence. So, an app that I brought today is kind of a competitor to Grammarly, which used to be a sponsor of the Twit Network. But this app is called Pro Writing. And I came across it just kind of randomly. And it works very similarly to Grammarly in that you feed it your text and you hit a button and then the engine just does its magic. But the app does a couple of extra things too. And it's a particularly good choice for folks who might need a little help translating maybe their native language into the various types of English dialect. This app can help you with that. So, Pro Writing Grammar, Style, and Spell Checker is exactly what I described it as. So I'm going to show you a quick little demo here on my screen now that I'm showing it off. So they give you a demo text to start out with, which is awesome. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit this button and check the grammar. And so the engine's going to do its magic. And now I'm already paying for the pro version. And the pro version, I will tell you the price when we get to the end. Because one of the reasons I picked this out is because it's a bit more affordable than Grammarly's monthly offerings. So this one gives you a 7-day free trial. So that's what I'm using right now. So back to the app. It's very intuitive to use. You just tap on what it is that you would like to address. And below, it will give you the different suggestions that it offers for your grammar or your vocabulary. So with this demo text, I can go per line and change. I'm just going to do this for demo's sake and change effectively how it's suggesting for you to change the copy. You just tap, and it'll do all that for you. And the nice thing is you don't have to write in this if you don't want to. You can just copy and paste your own text as you see fit. This also has a synonym. It also has a synonym engine. So the way it works is you check synonyms the way you would in grammar, and then you can go through the suggested words per word. So for the word sample, I've got different, whatever sample, however you want. And it's the same way as when you're doing the grammar check. Now, another couple of features that I mentioned before include translation ability. So earlier today, I translated a typical Romanian saying. And the cool thing about this is that actually, I did something wrong, and I apologize for that. So the cool thing about this is you can go to your settings, you go to corrector settings, and you can choose between your different language preferences. And so when you choose a language, let's say New Zealand English, you can go back into the translator and it will translate it the way in that particular English dialect that you chose. And so this is very helpful for folks who might be English as a second language speakers to just kind of learn how to spell things, maybe get a little grammar help. And then what you would do is, so you would type it up in here, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, translate it into English. And then you would take this English translation and you would copy it and you would toss it into, you would switch to the corrector and it would toss it in there for you. Now I accidentally highlighted the wrong thing when I did that. And so the idea is as it tosses it into that engine, then you can go and do the grammar check. And then when you're done, go ahead and copy everything and then paste it into the app that you'd like to go through. So as I mentioned, you have to pay to get like the true features of this app, the features that you want, which is the advanced grammar checks, the style checks, contextual synonyms, vocabulary enhancement. You want all of that stuff when you're writing. And so to unlock all of that, it's $4.99 a month, which if you're looking for something that's a little more affordable, it includes all that basic ability of a grammar checking engine, I think this isn't a bad deal. If you'd like, you can pay for it per year and get all of that, out of the door. But otherwise, if you just need it maybe for one assignment, one project, you could just pay for it per. It uses with the Google Pay payment system. And so it's nice and easy that way. So Pro Writing is what it's called. You can look it up in the Play Store. Pro Writing Grammar Style and Spell Checker. It has ads unless you pay to unlock and get all those neat features. It's just a nice way to have a little grammar help when maybe you're feeling stuck on your end.
Nice. Pro Writing, one word. Search for that in the Play Store and you will find it. Search and you shall find. Search. All right, go to twit.to/AAApoll473 to place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Rotation Manager, Headspace, Star Trek Fleet Command, or Pro Writing? Burke will give us the very first vote.
He's going to go for Star Trek.
Kind of looks like
Rotation Manager. Rotation
Manager at the very last second. Yeah. Didn't see that one coming. Although I know Burke really well. He loves Rotation. He's like a big Rotation fan.
Burke is an Android user, so when he's got a gripe, he wants something that fixes it. Isn't that right, yep. Burke?
That's right. That is it for this episode of All About Android. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And thank you, Matteo Doni, for hopping on tonight. What time is it, by the way, where you're at? I'm afraid to ask.
It's just after 3 a.m. here.
Oh my goodness. Holy cow. Okay, well, it's time for you to go to sleep.
Yes, it's a pleasure being on All About Android. Thank you for having me back and putting up with my terrible jokes.
Anytime. We love having you on, Mateo. What do you want people to know? Obviously, techtravelgeeks.com. Anything else?
Yes, techtravelgeeks.com, the main website. We have been working on releasing daily content on our YouTube channel, the Tech Travel Geeks YouTube channel, where we break down the reviews of the new smartphones and devices that we think are going to be useful for travel once things open up again, and focus on more bite-sized content more regularly. So this is what I'm spending all my free time on at the moment, is creating this content and just generally testing out new smartphones on and taking cat pictures with them. So if you want to follow me, I'm at Todaleo on Twitter and the same on Instagram. Feel free to reach out. And again, thanks for having me back on. And thanks for the chat room for the amazing Star Trek goat-related ship names, such as the USS Mutton. I really like that one.
Love it. Mateo, always a pleasure getting you on the show. We'll talk to you very soon. We'll have you back again soon. Who knows? Sooner rather than later if we're all still stuck in our home a couple of months from now. You just never know these days. Thank you, Mateo.
Thank you.
Flo, what about you?
Well, I'm certainly not planning on leaving anytime soon. So I'm here at home. Thank you, Mateo, for being here today. I always appreciate your informative reviews. As for myself, I am hunkered down doing a lot of work and also raising a child, which is just so much work. Yes. And it's great. Now I'm rambling. Anyway, I have been actively writing. You'll find some of my latest work at Android Police. You'll find some of my latest work at Lifehacker, Engadget. Hopefully Lifehacker soon. I have been pitching them. So just kind of working here on my end. Haven't updated the website in a while. I'm kind of focused on paid work right now, but in the next week or so, you should be seeing some updates. I'm doing a lot more online hangouts, by the way. So hanging out in Animal Crossing, if you play that game, let me know. Come join my Discord, florenceion.com, for a link. I'm opening up my island this week to have a little meetup for people who might want to exchange items, and also hoping to do another Twitch stream very soon. Haven't decided exactly what I'm going to do, but it was fun the last time, so I think I'll be doing it. And thank you, Burke, for having my Twitch stream available, although I guess I do have a link to that on my website, so thank you.
He's good. He rolls with it. Thank you.
Well, I felt bad because I didn't put the URL in the doc, and so that I was thinking out loud anyway. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Flo. What about you, Ron?
Yeah, real simple. Just follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RonXO. I'm not going to bore you with any other nonsense. Standard. Just keep rolling along. Working, raising two children, not playing Animal Crossing. There you go.
There you go. Scorbit.io also, if you want to find out why Ron thinks hardware is hard.
Hardware is hard. We're working at it. We're chipping away.
So, right on.
Soon, hopefully.
Cool. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Burke, in the studio for pushing buttons and making this show happen. We appreciate that you go into the studio each and every day to do your job. And thank you for helping us out. Also, big thanks to Victor, who behind the scenes is helping kind of produce the show and then edit after the fact. Although today he had to step away for a short little bit, but it was excused because he was finding out whether he and his wife were going to have another boy or another girl. Ooh. And we know now, and he gave me permission to say, that he is having another boy. So congratulations.
Yay. That's amazing. Yay.
Congratulations.
That's really exciting.
So many babies at All About Android. There's just something
Tell
in
me
the
about
air.
It. You won't be getting another one for me, though. Heck no. Not going to happen. Unless you consider my shows my babies, and in which case.
I'm sorry
case,
I set you up
baby.
For that one, Jason. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I forgive you. Twit.tv/HOA is Hands on Android. That's my latest show. which is kind of my baby, I suppose.
A show is a baby. It requires that much commitment and time.
Totally, totally. Last week's episode was taking an Android 10 device and turning it and bringing some features from 11 over to Android 10. The episode that's coming out this Thursday is some advanced tips and tricks for Chrome in Android. So you can find out how to use flags and that sort of stuff on the Chrome app in Android. That's twit.tv/HOA to subscribe, and I hope that you do. And that is it for this week. This show, All About Android, publishes every Tuesday evening after Victor has spent hours with it, because usually there's some work to be done. So we appreciate, again, his work on that. twit.tv/AAA is the show page where you can go to find all of the episodes. If you want to vote for a particular app in the arena, go to the show page for that particular episode. So if you go to twit.tv/AAA and then click through to the episode that you're listening to, you'll find a link on that page to vote for the app in the arena. Had some people wonder about that, so there you go. But other than that, I think we've reached the end of this show, so let's round it out and just say thank you for watching and listening. We'll see you next week on All About. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Check out other shows here on Twit TV, including my show, Hands-On Photography. On this show, I'm going to show you how to get the most out of your camera, as well as be a better post-processor. So head on over to twit.tv/hop and subscribe now.